beginning to look a lot like Boogaloo! Welcome back, everybody, to Season 4 of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, where we are once again holidamned! Oh, and my God, are we ever damned this time, because we are talking about Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny, 1972 craziness for us. Oh boy, and we will never be the same. Right. So I am 8th Dan Stanadu, your host, and let me introduce you to the usual gang of misfits. All right, I got Jack Hall in the house.
Sup.
Sup. It's like a little rap. Sup. All right, James Jim Kata.
Hey.
Busy doing other stuff.
I don't think I've made it out of the tale of Thumbelina yet. My brain is still trying to take in all of the complex narrative that I was experiencing there. Thrilled to be here. Can't wait to talk about both of these movies that have been slammed together.
Don't you want to say hello to all your fellow employees at Pirate World?
Pirates World, yes.
Oh, I missed the opportunity.
Totally you did, that. Yeah.
All right, and finally, we have Nick Boxer, who I know is happy to be here to talk about one of his favorite movies, Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny.
Greetings and salutations. I have yet to recover. I watched this movie way too close to our record time.
Okay, we got to make a rule about not watching too close to the rhetoric time. It skews things. You can't say memorable moments or not when you just watch this.
I could have used another week.
I could have never watched it at all. How this works is, if for those of you who are wondering, our first season, I think actually our first two seasons, we made a consensus on the 8 films that we did. And then we just, you know, we evolve as we go along. And now everybody gets to pick 2. If this year, everybody got to pick 2, and the rule was, though, you couldn't pick more than 1 horror film. So you had to pick something besides a horror film. Hopefully a family favorite, or the case of, I guess, Hebrew Hammer. I think that was you, wasn't it, Jim?
That was mine, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to get a non-Christmas movie into the season.
So the non-Christmas movie picked, this one was Stan. So based on that, I just want to say, Stan, fuck you.
Yeah, why does Stan get 2 horror movies?
Nick, the floor is yours to tell us what on earth has happened in this movie.
please do so.
The best. I think we just have to look at it. It is a movie,
mm-hmm.
loosely using the term in the loosest possible sense, filmed in Florida. At a defunct theme park.
Not defunct at the time, but defunct now.
Oh, sorry, soon to be defunct.
Oh, 5 years. 5 years later.
Yeah, like falling apart. Yeah, about to collapse.
After Disney World Disney World opens up in Florida, it loses a lot of business and goes out of business in 75. And then they almost reopened it as a biblical the holiday cheer section here, you know, some of the facts. Almost reopened it as a biblical theme park, and when that didn't happen, now it's a bunch of condominiums.
Okay, I will make an attempt at the so-called story in
this. It should be the easiest story in the world.
If you only tell the one, yes. This is essentially 2 movies. Well, actually, no. It's essentially 1 movie and something else that's around it.
Oh, don't forget the 3rd movie when they throw in the Tom Sawyer stuff really make... What the hell was that?
Well, I'll get there when I get to my holiday facts. Yes.
Okay.
Pretty cheer.
So Santa gets stuck in the sand in Florida and is abandoned by his reindeer.
That's hot.
Yeah. Fucking Santa.
So
who cares?
He calls upon a bunch of kids to help him out who have various devices to try to get him out of the sand. None of them work, so he decides to tell them the story of Thumbelina.
Of course, yeah.
Because that's the way you get out of sand. I think that's all I can go into on this movie, because holy, what the hell was that?
Well, he tells them about Thumbelina. Thumbelina happens. And then for however long Thumbelina was, 4 or 5 hours. And then afterwards, we come back, and there's the dog, and, you know, the dog is, there's a dog with one of the kids, and he asks the dog for help, and then the dog goes and gets the ice cream bunny somehow, who comes with all of the kids singing their song, and they save Santa Claus, and therefore Christmas.
Spoilers, man, just throw the surprise ending right out the window.
I just want to say thank you to the ice cream bunny for saving Christmas.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
What the hell?
And okay, so we've got the Santa story, we've got the meta story within that. So I want to be clear meta, that we don't just get the story of Thumbelina. We get the story of a young woman who is at Pirates World, who goes to the worst exhibit in the park, which is just small dioramas of the Thumbelina story, and a speaker. Like a speaker and nailed to the wall,
a tinny speaker. No,
should have got with terrible. Should have got main billing for the speaker.
gets more screen time than anything else in the film. Tells her the story of Thumbelina. This girl imagines herself as Thumbelina. So it's just like layers upon layers. You got to peel this one away. Because like this is like it's this and Inception as far as what you need to.
Now was this released to the theaters? I need a holiday fact of some kind.
It was released to the theaters, and also by the way, it also besides Thumbelina, there's also another version out there where it's Jack and the Beanstalk instead that they threw in the middle. Another movie that the same guy. Actually, I refuse to watch the other version.
I've been trying to find it. Have you seen it? Is it available? Like, is it actually?
I did not look for it because fuck.
I'm desperate.
No, they did a riff tracks on the other version as well. They've done both versions, but there was no VHS release, which is I'm feeling with what we watched.
Yeah, this is the DVD. There's the DVD with the other one, with the Jack and the Beanstalk.
Okay, but, so again, this one is up on archive.org.
Finally, a reason to use my parental blockers on my Amazon account.
So here's what I want to say about this, one of the many things. So Barry Mahone, the guy who's produced this and probably directed it, he certainly directed Thumbelina. He also did a couple years before, Thumbelina just came out. Like this came out in 72. Thumbelina and Jack and the Beanstalk came out in 71. In 70, so just 2 years. He has two other holiday Santa Claus movies that he could have put in this instead to keep the theme, and instead he went with so this is like a mess beyond belief. The fact that he went with Jack and the Beanstalk and Thumbelina, he could have instead gone with, wait, let me tell you them, because 2 years before he's doing this, he's doing movies like Bunny Yeager's Nude Camera and Naughty Nudes and Nude in the Window, Nude a Go-Go, The Love Cult, Sin in the City, yeah, a good Time with a Bad Girl, The Sex Killer, Fanny Hill Meets Lady Chatterley, I Was a Man, and then The Adventures of Busty Brown, and then Fanny Hill Meets Dr. Erotico, and then The Wonderful Land of Oz and Santa and the Three Bears and like Thumbelina. Like, it's unbelievable.
That's the guy I don't want to meet at a theme park.
No kidding.
So essentially, I mean, the Thumbelina part of this movie is like a movie he made like for the park, I think. Like But it's only 60 minutes long, so they Santa stuff is just padded out to a full hour and a half.
Well, Thumbelina, I think, is longer. It felt like much longer than that. It's an hour and 12 minutes. Okay. And so, I mean, and his other one that he did, Santa's Christmas Elf, named Calvin, is 110 minutes, the one that he did the year before. So, like I say, you think Santa might tell a Santa story or a Christmas story since he had one in his archives. But no.
What I love about the Thumbelina thing is, though, about 20 minutes into it, when Santa says, okay, we're gonna, like, I'm going to tell you the story of Thumbelina, rather than just like stitch these together, there are distinct opening credits for Thumbelina.
It's
that are 25 minutes into this movie.
It's
full credits for the film.
Like, they just, I mean, there's no attempt to seamlessly integrate these. It's just bam, hard cut and done. But really, you can tell pretty much right off the bat from the hellish voiceover that drones on right trying to tell you what's going on in the story, to the fact that when Santa is attempting to get out of his fucking sled, I don't know why he just didn't go for a walk to find a phone. He had to stick with his sleigh
covered, like, a lot of this little stuff they actually covered. He says something about it wouldn't be very Santa-like to leave the sleigh.
Do they explain the sheep?
No, they didn't explain the animals.
But they led, and the fact that they led off.
The horse can't do it. The donkey can't do it. Let's give the sheep a shot.
The gorilla couldn't do it.
They led off with the gorilla.
That was the fry the sheep.
You guys are ruining this for the listeners because they don't know what you're saying yet. Yeah. Somebody explain this sequence.
All right. Well, Santa is stuck. So he is called telepathically to the children. So all the children nearby have come out of freezing. And because at one point they pause and hold a static shot of them, and so they come out of freezing, and then they go off to help Santa Claus. So Santa explains the problem, and then they all go off with their ideas on how they're going to save. Now, the idea every one of them has is that each of them is going to grab a different animal and attempt to hitch it to Santa's sleigh so that they can, in turn, drag him out of the sand. The weirdest thing for me is the fact that the first one that they used to lead off was the guy in the ape costume. And I thought, wow, already this is Boogaloo already. But then afterwards we go to like a goat, and then there is a horse, and then there's a sheep, and I'm sure I'm missing something. And none of these animals.
A cow.
Yep. Yeah, they use a cow, yeah.
And they can't back these animals in, or won't in some cases, because, otherwise you'd totally ruin the movie.
Isn't there a thing like you can't back a cow up? Isn't that a thing?
Animals, dogs too, they don't want to walk backwards.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and so they can't back them in, so none of them can save Santa, therefore. And because of this, Santa really needs to think it over. So then the best way for Santa to think it over is to tell the story of, in this case, Thumbelina. Because as we've learned from watching Thumbelina, I have no idea how Thumbelina actually helps.
We learned something from watching Thumbelina.
I have the foggiest idea what I was supposed to have learned from that story.
In fairness, I don't think Santa learned anything.
No.
He didn't come up with any ideas either. He took off his jacket afterward and went to sleep.
That was the best idea he had the whole time.
I didn't know why he hadn't taken that off, other than the fact that, as Jack pointed out, it's not Santa-like to do that.
Yeah.
He said Santa always has to be presentable or something like that.
I think that this whole story could be explained by Santa being in the hot sun, constantly looking up at the sun. He does that before he looks directly into the sun. You have the sun at the North Pole, Santa, not the whole year, but you know not to look directly into it. I suspect this is just a fever dream.
Well, and I would that explain the fact that right off the top, or like 2 or 3 minutes in, you hear Tom Sawyer talking to Huck Finn, you know, hey, what's that? And then...
Yeah, when
he
calls to the children, two of the children that come are Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, who don't actually join the rest of the children. They just watch from the bushes.
It appears to be shot totally separately because they never interact.
He was making a Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn film and
naturally
only had one day's worth of filming and decided to pad this movie. Literally.
Good stuff. I like it.
That's fantastic. Like it. Now, see,
it's not that much footage he used.
No, he had one day's worth of filming.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, if you're using, like...
They gave up after making...
If
they're like,
the movie was a minute shorter, would it have made that much of a difference?
They think themselves after one day. Shit, this is harder than I thought.
Nick, if this movie...
I don't want to waste that footage.
If this movie was 1 minute shorter, I would have been 1 minute happier. But no, and this is, I think this really has to be explained to that certain degree. I mean, we love the bad movies. We truly do. But every now and then, the bad movie comes along that it is extraordinarily hard to watch. And in this case, I will never want to sit through Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny again.
Sometimes when you stare into the Boogaloo stares back.
Yes. Yes. And
we have not properly explained the animals at the beginning yet.
I felt done with that. I thought we explained that. Fair enough. I thought we covered that.
Oh, okay. I'll wait till what the fucks.
Yeah. We talked about all the different animals. None of them could pull the sleigh. That's why you hung up on that one. 65 minutes of this movie is Thumbelina.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't care to talk that much about Thumbelina because, I mean, other than the fact that the acting is hellish,
Hey, now we're not a review show, so let's not get bogged down.
Exactly. I mean, I think the sets look quite nice. Overall.
Well, the sets are in a concept because she's supposed to be looking at these handmade dioramas and imagining the story, and all of the sets look like they're made out of paper mache and everything. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I'll give the movie is that they carried that. Like, you would think that would be the thing that this would make no sense, but actually the sets look like what she should be looking at if she's looking at a diorama.
Yeah.
So I'll that's probably the highest production value of the whole film.
And it follows the story of Thumbelina quite well. So I actually don't have a problem with Thumbelina per se, other than the fact that it's jammed in the middle of Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. Sure.
I will question that we watch a 65 minute version of Thumbelina that ends with the last 5 minutes summarizing what you've just watched, where she gets to the end and Thumbelina like then runs through all of the things she has done in the story you have just watched. She's like, there was that time I was in my house and then I got caught by a frog and then I was out in the trees and.
It's for those who nodded off in the middle. They want to make sure that for those for those people who accidentally fell asleep, then they know what's going on.
I'm seeing in my notes that I had this optimistic moment because I wrote my notes as I was watching the film. And it says here, at 25 minutes, cut in weird short film with credits. I honestly thought that this wasn't going to last. This was only going to be a couple of minutes and then we'd move on to the I kind of thought like, oh, Santa's going to tell us some stories. We'll probably get maybe three of these things.
It's true. I was wondering how they were going to fill out the Santa storyline because by the time he started to tell the story, I'm like, dude, I don't actually know how much more they can put in. I mean, they've burned through all the animals, so what the fuck is left? You know, but as we found out, Thumbelina.
Well, and then they go to Thumbelina, and we're watching Thumbelina. As you know, Thumbelina, gets there to her mother, ends up with some frogs who trap her, and then goes to the moles. And the moles, you know, Hans Christian Andersen is watching this, thinking, "I wish I'd never written this at this point." And then the moles, you know, she marries a mole, and this and that. And let me tell you, I'm watching this Thumbelina part, And it's you know, 10 minutes in, and I'm trying to give it a chance, you know, and the girl's singing, and I think, oh, Shay, what was her name? Shay Grant or something like that? Shay something. The, you know, lovely voice. She had a lovely singing voice. It's Shay Garner, who ended up being on Star Trek TNG as the scientist in an episode. Because, you know, this is 1970. She didn't work again until 82.
Understandable.
But I'm watching this, and yeah, 20 minutes into the Thumbelina portion, and I'm watching it, and I have a thought to myself, and what the fuck am I doing with my life? I
learning to hate frogs.
I thought, when did it seemed to have such promise at one point? Where did it go so wrong? How did it end up like this? This isn't where I saw myself.
Well, what you need is a visit from the ice cream bunny.
That does make everything better.
That will save it. That will save your life.
Oh. I love that Thumbelina, not only did it have opening credits, it has like a the end and then says another fine picture from Pirates World to come visit us in Florida.
Oh, God.
And then we go back to Santa. Like it's to put a bow on this, we come back to Santa.
Oh, yeah. And he just says, you know, like, I mean, all he does is say, like, see, there's what a great story. There's so much to learn from Thumbelina. And then it's just like the children just run off. They've gotten bored of Santa's story, understandably. And they decide to run off.
That's the smartest move these children made all day. Was
except for the one with the dog who comes back, you know, and Santa's got to pet the dog and talk to the dog and pray to the dog. But,
what the fuck am I doing with my life?
The thought I had watching this film was that for years they threatened that I would get flashbacks from all the acid I took. and watching this, you see that they were finally right.
Oh my God.
So it's like
you know, Jack, it could totally be worse.
Really?
Yes, it could have been worse. You could have
watched the Jack and the Beanstalk back to back with this?
No, you could have been one of the children involved in this movie. And then your life would be far worse off because you would have actually been a part of it.
We don't want to be here as long as Thumbelina was. We better get to scoring.
It's true.
Okay. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate every film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category that we talk about is called a schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
All right. Well, throwing in Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, that cranks it up a little bit. Guys in an ape costume, I mean, an ape costume is always schlock. For schlock, I'm going to give it a 6. For appeal, I'm going to give it a minus 10.
So it gives it a minus 4? No,
I'll give it a 6.
All right. Nick Aruni, Nick Boxer.
I'm going to go a little lower, but 5.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm just throwing out numbers.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I completely lost you there. What would you give it?
Give it a 5.
Give it a 5. Did he give an explanation why?
So the scores so far were, so we've got a 6, we've got a 5. He gave no explanation. He decided that he declined to make comment why a 5.
He has no goat in the race.
So you can bid 1 and then, you know, if closest price without going over. I've forgotten what we're doing.
6, 5, 4. I got to give it a 3. I can't wish I could give it a 4. I got to go 3 because.
Well, why can't you give it a 4?
Because it's a 3. Because it's a 3. Because this movie, it has the schlock, and that's the only thing that gives it any value, but there's not enough to give it a lot of value. It's not Frankenstein Island.
There's no doubt about that.
Not entertaining. It'll make up the points in the WTF, I have a feeling.
I don't know. I got to be honest. I got a bit of a crush on Thumbelina. She's an attractive young lady who's, I mean, sure, she's 2 inches tall, but those legs go all the way to the floor.
Hey, and in 1998, let me tell you, 19 years later, if you look at the, I'll send you the picture of her in Star Trek. She was still lovely. I'm gonna do that right now.
Beautiful woman. I'm gonna give this an 8. I thought this was like schlock all over the place. That there's opening and closing credits to Thumbelina in the midst of another movie is amazing. They're actually longer credits than the movie itself has. I just love it. All right, we call the next category more heart than budget.
Oh God. Wow. This movie. God, did it have any heart whatsoever? I know it had no budget, so it's really just a matter of whether it had heart. I'm going to give it a 4 because I can't decide.
Wow, you're generous. I'm giving it a 2. There's no one who wasn't phoning it in on this one.
Okay, so I was thinking to myself, it's like, oh, there seemed to be, if nothing else, trying to genuinely create a family movie. They're just not doing a good job. I thought they were genuine in that. And then, like I said, I looked up Barry Mahon a little bit more. And while I have great respect for him, you know, escaping from a gulag and being Errol Flynn's manager and pilot, and the character of Steve McQueen in The Great Escape was loosely based on him. Wow. Yeah. Some more holiday cheer there. But that's pretty awesome. Then I see this quote that I'm going to give you, personal quote from him, explaining his style of low-budget filmmaking. We have not aimed for the single picture that is going to make us rich. We are looking for the business that's like turning out Ford cars or anything else. If there's a certain profit per picture and we make so many pictures, then we have established a business that is based on a basis that's economical. So I give it a 0.
A 0. Wow. All right. I was far, far more generous than you, Jack. I gave it a 1 because I forgot that 0 was a score we were doing. It's brutally commercial. I mean, it's like really the rest of the story exists it is literally padding it out to get to a feature length. There is no, and the fact that there is a version where they could substitute in an entirely different story in the middle of it. It was still the same film, but the budget is insanely low on this thing. If you know your filmmaking, you notice in the Santa stuff, none of it is sync sound.
Oh God, yeah.
There's no room tone. It's just like Santa's voice sounds like a narration track, and luckily his mouth's covered through the whole thing, so you can do it that way. But there's no Foley, there's no like sync sound, there's no room tone.
Let me and here's something else fascinating on that. Mahon, this director and producer, he established the production machine, a high tech film production company in Hollywood making motion pictures for theatrical and television release. Mahon was the first producer to adapt and apply computer technology as well as spreadsheet applications such as multi-plan to the breakdown, scheduling, budget, and financial analysis of feature length motion pictures and movies of the week for Columbia Pictures. So, like, he knew how to get something out of his budget.
So he had an Apple IIe.
Hey, by
that's
the way,
what I'm getting.
Sent the picture to our group chat there on WhatsApp. Check out the picture of Shea Garner in Star Trek.
It's a handsome young lady,
wasn't she?
All righty. Okay. Our next category. We'll add that to the show notes and such. Our next category we call "What the Fuck" moments.
The fact that this, you know, I'm not going to talk very long. The fact that this movie was made at all wins the "What the Fuck" moment for me. The fact that somebody decided that you would try to tell even 35 or 25 minutes of Santa miss it, or like the fucking reindeer flew off because it was too fucking hot, leaving Santa to rot. That in and of itself is enough for me to be like, what? But then finally at the end when you see the Ice Cream Bunny, and the Ice Cream Bunny drives through fucking Pirates World, I think, in its 45-minute drive to get to Santa.
I wrote that down. How long is that? Far away was the Ice Cream Bunny?
And the kids are on there, like, the kids must have walked for days to get to the Ice Cream Bunny. But that sucker, like, that's the entire, like, so if we have 15 minutes off the top and then we have 10 minutes, well, that 10 minutes is entirely the Ice Cream Bunny driving away. 10.
Yeah, they kind of had me on this one as soon as the ape showed up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
And then, you know, they exploited the petting zoo at the park. And then you have the Thumbelina stuff and the credits and this. Yeah, 9. I mean, nothing in this movie should be there. So, yeah, there's a lot of WTF.
Okay. We mentioned that there's animals, but. Like I said, all these different animals are trying to get these kids show up. Number one, how do kids get, what kid has a horse and a goat and a cow?
It's the '70s. Kids had animals.
It was a different time. Kids in Florida just had animals.
We didn't everywhere. Keep kids inside, you know, watching TV all the time. They were out playing with their goats.
Playing with their goats and their horses and their gorillas.
Yeah. They're apes. And their father in a gorilla costume.
This kid's like 5 years old and she shows up with this gorilla. And like I say, they have different animals trying to unlodge the damn thing, like the goat and whatever. But they started with the gorilla. They started. You always end with the gorilla.
Uh-huh. I love that they built up to the cow.
That's like, what I was saying. That's what I was saying. How you just blew the entire thing by leading with the gorilla.
Like, with the gorilla. How many of you are convinced that that everybody in this film, filming it, all the kids, everybody was doing this with the bunnies coming out, and they're all thinking it's the Easter Bunny saving Santa, mm-hmm. until somebody said, you know, Santa and the Easter Bunny already exists, and somebody went, fuck, how about ice cream? That'll make sense.
You know, actually, in fairness, I forgot completely about the North Pole scene right off the bat. Where,
well, I was going to get.
Yeah, yeah. So, well,
that's
so
where
please.
That was where I was going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll save it for you then. But yeah, I'm convinced that everybody's, because logically, if the Santa was being saved by, but since there's never been an ice cream bunny, I don't know what one is, and there's no explanation or ice cream anywhere in this movie.
But there is a fire truck that for the ice cream bunny to ride on.
Easter Bunny has a fire truck. That's not a push. But yeah, it's unbelievable. So you guys gave this a 10, and all this is a 10. But Thumbelina is like a 2 for, like, there's not a lot because it is a fairly straight adaptation. So based on the fact that that's like most of the movie, I can't go as high as you guys. I'm going to just go with 7.
I think that the Thumbelina, though it makes sense within itself, the fact that it just rambles on forever, like, because it is like 60 odd minutes of this film, when I thought, like, you know, it's going to tell a couple of things and then move on to the next. So this movie opens on about a minute and a half in Santa's workshop where they're working away on the toys, and all the elves, so little kids dressed as elves, and the little the elves are like, where the hell is Santa? Because the reindeer have come back.
But don't forget, they're also singing out of key and out of step with each other, the worst song you can imagine. They've written to this movie.
Was that a song? I tried listening to it, and there were no detectable words.
It's kind of, but there's, I want to drill down to something in this scene. So there's a knock at the door, yes. Or there's a sound outside, and one of the elves goes to the door. The door handle is a hand. The door handle is like a fist. Like, it looks like a sex toy.
Well, it makes sense given his other movies.
The elf looks out and like looks at the reindeer and the whole thing. There's no explanation. Like, it's never acknowledged, or there's no close up. There's no possible reason that this exists. So it really stuck with me in for the entire film.
I just couldn't believe that they got looked like, I don't know, I assume because it was from a distance, that they just took some different animals and strapped some antlers to them, but they look like real reindeer. But there's no snow on the ground. It's the North Pole. There was no snow on the ground.
It's just a shot that they took. It's like a stock shot of reindeer.
It's just a stock shot, yeah. Because no one interacts with them. It's just a stock shot.
Were you thinking the hand doorknob was going to pay off somewhere?
I think maybe I thought we'd come back to that.
Yeah. Were you thinking that the North Pole was going to pay off? Because, that did not pay off.
Yeah, we get like a minute
all.
And a half the North Pole and we never come back to that.
Really, other than the fact that the movie finished, and actually that both movies finished, there's not a lot of payoff in the whole thing. And Jack, I would argue, when you say that Thumbelina doesn't get a lot of what the fucks, I would suggest that the fact, as we talked about earlier, the fact that Thumbelina had that meta story of being the girl watching it in Pirates World.
That's just a narrative choice. If you watch Thumbelina by itself, that'd be a weird choice, but it's not like WTF out the... It's not, you know, the level of WTF that Thumbelina needs to reach is starting with the gorilla first. So
did anyone, as she's walking through the park before we get to the Thumbelina story, did anyone else think that theme park kind of looked kind of dangerous?
Like it's got that crazy, I wrote that down, that these rides look really, really unsafe.
It was a 1970s theme park.
These are pretty much a typical theme park from 70s.
Because they had like a roller coaster that seemed to have no seatbelts.
Well, did you pull any, what are you calling them this year? Halifax? What are you calling them?
Holiday cheer.
Did you pull anything on the park itself?
I already gave a whole bunch at the beginning of the show.
All right. Well, I should have been paying attention. So it had a steeplechase ride, which is like you just get on this horse that looks like a roller coaster. It just races around with kids sitting on the back of these like wooden horses.
Yeah, but
it's insane. I love it.
But the parents are thinking to themselves, well, if they die, they won't have to watch Thumbelina. Neither will I.
Well, this is like this. I mean, this is the old days where you would have five kids and expect a couple of them not to make it. Like, you lose a couple at Pirates World. That's just the way that goes. Like, it's more room for everyone else in the station wagon on the drive home.
That's right.
I actually happen to know where those horses went.
Nice.
I did a deep pull on that one. When the park closed, the horses were sold to Coney Island.
That's right. Yeah.
Coney Island theme park owner. Nice. They were supposedly used, and one was donated to the Smithsonian Museum to display, like, you know, this is what killed your children, your grandparents.
this is why you never met your Uncle Steve.
It is possible, though. I think some kids probably died watching Thumbelina from old age.
All right, let's move into the next category we call memorable moments.
Well, my biggest hope is that in a year, I actually don't remember anything from this movie. It seems highly unlikely, but at the same time, perhaps just some sort of random haze of Santa. What I really want is to remember enough to be like, hey, Santa, no, don't go there. Don't do that. So I'm going to give it a 2.
You know what? I'm going to go middle of the road. I'm hoping this film eats enough of my brain cells that I will remember not to watch it again.
That's not very important.
Yeah. Sort of meaning in the middle. No. 5. I don't care.
way to talk up the importance of the category. 5. I don't care.
He's now dead inside for this movie.
This movie will do that to you. Look, I was going to give this a 0, because like everything's Boogaloo, WTF, nothing's. And then I thought to myself, you know what? No, Shay Garner. I don't think all the songs in Thumbelina were bad for the style it was. And she had a lovely singing voice. So I'll give it a 2.
I think the most memorable thing is that Shay Garner was a beautiful young lady who did not get enough work in her career. Little enough that her IMDb account does not have a photo attached to it, which is bad sign for your career that there's no film that you were recognizable enough in. So I'm only giving this a 1 because I forgot that we're doing zeros.
You can still change it right now.
I'm committed. Our final category.
So should being the people who made this.
Our final category we call Crazy Concept.
Oh, Jesus. this is a very hard one because Thumbelina is not a crazy concept at all. Not in the least. Now, the fact that you've bolstered Thumbelina by telling the Santa Claus and the ice cream bunny story, that's pretty crazy. And then the fact that you threw the Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn part in just because you had it, also very crazy. Thumbelina's bringing it down, but I'm going 6.
Yeah, this movie's really hard to score because it isn't a single film.
Yeah.
The scores are all over the place because it depends on what time you're thinking of the time. 4. I can't tell you why.
Crazy concept. Dude, you took a Santa Claus movie, shot 20 minutes of it, put the Easter Bunny in it, forgot to call him the Easter Bunny, threw another movie that wasn't Christmas related into it, and another one in a different cut that's not Christmas related into it, when you have a Christmas movie you own the rights to.
Yeah, 9. No. But so much of the movie is Thumbelina.
I'm allowed to score the 9. The fact Thumbelina's in this is a crazy concept. 9.
I'm experiencing this remarkable thing where the more we talk about Santa, the more the less I remember that Thumbelina's in it, and the more we talk about Thumbelina, the more disturbed, the more like shaken I am when you bring up Santa. Like, we were talking about Thumbelina there for a couple of minutes straight, and then like someone said, well, and then there's a Santa part. I'm like, oh fuck, there was a Santa part in this movie. I can't hold the two in my head. They're like contradictory concepts. You can't hold them both at the same time. So I'm going to go with an 8 on this one. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the balloting. Every season we have 6 secret modifiers, and this film has one of them. We call the modifier Hide the Nog. No one drinks a festive beverage in this film. So that gets a -1, which brings it to a pretty respectable 49.5 out of 100.
I'd like to mention a WTF that I forgot. Because at the beginning, like when Santa's calling to the kids through telepathy, it's like Jason, Steven,
girls.
Girls. Yes. It's like 3 girls on the screen. He just gets lazy. He goes, girls. And then he gets into the next one. He's back to Karen. Jacqueline,
I like that it shows what all the kids are doing. Like there's 2 kids that are skipping rope.
Shit out of each other.
There's the 2 kids that are wrestling, and it stays there for a really long time.
And it's violent, man. The kids are going
at. It's a long while of those 2 kids wrestling. All right, let's close up the mailbag.
That's right. Well, this brings to an end our take on Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny, and I wish all of you well who decide to watch this movie with us. Don't say we didn't warn you. All right.
So, I think the important thing is to end this episode regarding this particular film with a fuck you, Stan.
Hey, you guys set the rules of no 2 horror movies, so fuck you. This is what you get. if it was good enough for Riftrax, I thought it's good enough for the Boogaloo.
That's a terrible guideline.
Horrible. They're looking for movies to make fun of. We're looking for the ultimate B movie.
Well, this is a B movie, and it's Boogaloo, all right. it's just not something you want to watch again. But hopefully we will feel different next episode when we sit down to talk about elves and we're back to the scary. So that should be a little bit better for us, I would hope. All right, Jim, why don't you tell us how the peoples can find us on the internets?
All right, well, the best place to catch us is on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo when talking about the B movies you love. And elsewhere on the internet, you can follow our podcast sponsors, We Talk Podcasts. So they have the website, wetalkpodcasts.com, where you can find the Octagon, where we keep track of all of the films as we review them, as we analyze them. And also Facebook and Twitter, We Talk Podcasts.
All right. Well, people are now truly starting to understand why this is called Season 4 Hall of Damned, because, oh boy, we are totally damned for that one. All right. I hope that nobody has anything else to say, because I am ready to move along. All right. For Jim, for Jack, and for Nick, I am 8th Dan Stanadu. Thank you for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Fuck you, Stan.
Where is he? Look, Jensen, out the door there.
Santa not being there. Of all places for Santa to be in his sleigh, stuck in the sand, thousands of miles from the North Pole, way down in Florida. And without his reindeer, because they were so hot, they took off to the North Pole. What a predicament. Especially the long beard and the red velvet suit and the white fur. That's a lot of heavy clothing to be worn on a beach in Florida. And Santa was mighty uncomfortable because the sun in Florida was certainly a lot hotter than any sun at the North Pole.